Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Players with Theater Conspiracy at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers are currently running productions of Henrik Ibsen's play A Doll's House through March 11th. The production, set in a Norwegian town in the late 1800s, goes behind the facade of an ideal marriage and challenges audiences to consider the cultural limitations placed on women at the time and the stifling lack of opportunities available to them. The play questions the roles of men and women in a traditional 19th century marriage, which to audiences at the time was sometimes controversial, even scandalous. The play itself was inspired by the true story of a friend of the playwright whose efforts to save her husband's life led to scandal and even her commitment to an asylum. With us now in studio for a closer exploration of the play's themes and its conflicts and how they look through the lens of contemporary society is director Ann Dodd. Dodd studied theater at Vanderbilt University and at HB Studio in New York. Previously, Ann was a company member of the Academy Theater in Atlanta, and she's acted in New York and Chicago as well. She also acts and directs here in Southwest Florida. She directed Laboratory Theater's 2016 production of Sirens, among others. And Dodd, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Also with us in studio is actor Dina Gehlin. We just talked about this. And she plays the lead role of Nora Helmer in the Theater Conspiracy's currently running production of A Doll's House. Dina is a prolific actor here in Southwest Florida, including roles in Theater Conspiracy's 2016 production of The Country Wife and the Center for the Arts Bonita Springs Community Players production of the classic comedy noir Arsenic and Old Lace, one of my favorites, and the Laboratory Theater's production of Steve Martin's The Underpants, and that's just naming a couple. Please, thank you so much, Dina, for joining us. Great to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having us.
I invite listeners to join the conversation, too. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Ann Dodd, I wanted to start with you. First of all, what led to the decision to choose this play? What attracted you to it?
Well, this has long been one of my favorite plays. Ibsen is my favorite playwright. I love the character of Nora. I think she's the first heroine of contemporary theater. I love her story of her courage. I wanted to do this play for over 40 years, and I sort of aged out of it in my acting career, so I never got to play Nora. When I first saw Dina on stage and I didn't know her, I said to my husband, "That's my Nora."
Wow, wow. So. that's great to see something you've had so much history with and then, you know, finally get to bring it to life and hopefully introduce it to new audiences and spark that same love of this production. And as I mentioned in the introduction, the play is based on the real life events of a woman that the playwright was friends with. Can you tell us a bit about that backstory and what happened to the woman that Dina's character Nora is based on?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, I had no idea that this was based on a true story.
Really?
I did not. I stumbled upon this. There have been so many adaptations of this play, so many interpretations of it, and I really wanted to find the most contemporary, the most accessible. So I was reading many different versions, and I found that preface in Frank McGinnis's version, which was done maybe 6 years ago. And I was, as the Brits say, gobsmacked. I had no idea it was based on a true story.
And now with the various translations that are out there, are there some that are more modern than others, I guess, in the words that they would use? Or do they tend to try and stick as much as possible to the, you know, original words, even if it maybe dates it a little bit?
Oh, no. The one that we're using is far more accessible.
Okay.
It's not as British stylized,
okay,
you know, where everyone speaks very properly. And I really wanted – I actually toyed with even making it contemporary, say 50s or 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is a play of its time, so it really had to be set in 1879. But definitely, you know, it's the first realist play It's the first play that was done where people spoke like they truly speak and were not speaking in iambic pentameter, or we're not speaking, you know, as a stereotypical character. And that's why this play was so scandalous, is people were listening to people talk as people really speak.
And maybe another aspect of form following function, you know, the actors are speaking, you know, the way real people speak. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the play is tackling real themes, but also things that people didn't talk about. And that, I mean, as we see through some of the characters in the play, often people who are maybe being victimized or see their limited opportunities and don't even consider that it could be a different way.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Definitely.
Dina, what attracted you to this role?
I read this play in high school. It was required reading for honors English. I think a lot of high schools throughout the country, I believe that this is required reading. But I just fell in love with the story. I fell in love with Nora. My maternal grandmother's name was Nora.
Oh.
And this character of Nora actually reminds me so much of her, always has. So this play has just always been very, very special to me. And when I met Anne a couple of years ago, the show I was doing, The Underpants, and Anne did say, if I ever do a Doll's House, you have to play my Nora. I said, anytime, anywhere, you got it. I love it.
Oh,
so
this has been in the
here
works
we
for
are.
Some time.
Yes. This was our brainchild.
A method to our madness.
Yes, there's a method. Oh. So we manifested this into being. And here we are. I just absolutely love Nora. I love her strength, her courage. I love that she has her own agenda. She is, in her own right, she's an actress. She's a woman of her times, told what to do, when to do it. But she has her little treats and sneaks candy and is a different person for each person within the play. So that's fun as an actor, being able to play a woman who's constantly on her toes acting.
Yeah.
Challenging and very fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like you get to play a different character for each dynamic
yes.
you have with the other characters
each
on the stage.
Each person, each new character that comes out onto stage, Nora is different for that person.
Mm. Well, I think it speaks to, I'm just going to read a quote from the play
yes.
right here. He says, a woman cannot be herself in modern society, in exclusively male society with laws made by men, and with prosecutors and judges who assess feminine conduct from a masculine standpoint. And it's challenging for an actor, but it's also interesting to consider from a societal standpoint of she has to be somebody different for everyone. So when is she ever herself?
There are moments on stage when I'm completely alone. And those are the very few moments in the play when you get to see who Nora really is.
Yeah.
Those are those very, very, very rare little moments when you get to see who she is, what she's thinking, what's going on in her brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the broader themes or takeaways from the play, at least from I think, concerns how women in society are perceived at all. And as opposed to, you know, women aren't really the opposite sex in this play. Women are the derivative sex. If men are strong, women have to be weak. If men are caretakers, women have to be cared for like children. The play doesn't exactly come right out and say this, but it's all just within the context of the character dynamics and the choices these characters have to make.
Well, the play does actually say it, though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because Torvald, the husband, actually says that to Nora. He tells her that she is weak, that she
yes.
is fragile, that she is a child, that she can't think for herself, that it's lucky that she has him. It's
yeah.
And it's been very interesting in that women are audibly gasping
oh, yes.
in some of the performances.
Yes. He has a monologue at the end that just makes you want to absolutely throw up. It's very sickening. And the way he perceives his wife, and he says that he lays it all out there. And there's been a lot of audible gasps and some comments made, which is really fun from the audience.
Yeah, I would really love to discuss the ending with you, but I don't want to give anything away for somebody who hasn't seen it. So we'll do that after the show. I also was hoping maybe you could touch on how the notion of suicide works as a powerful motif in this play.
Oh, okay, let me think of how to phrase this without giving too much away. Mm. So, okay, this has been put out in reviews, so I can say this part. Torvald is very ill. He's very sick. Nora's father is also very ill at the same time. the doctors tell Nora that the only chance Torvald has to survive is to get out of Norway, get out of the cold, and go warm up, get him to the south, go warm him up. She didn't want to tell her dad that her husband's life was in danger. She didn't want to put that burden on him while he was dying. So she took out a loan and signed her father's name on it, not knowing that this was wrong. Women didn't have rights then. Women couldn't have bank accounts. We couldn't take out loans. This is something could never happen. The gentleman who gave her the loan winds up blackmailing her. Her only option, truly, and probably in life and in her mind, was to kill herself, was to take her life at certain moments throughout the play, is either to run away, because the only options for her, if she was discovered, she would have been put into an asylum.
Yeah.
Her husband would have – that probably was the only option, asylum or prison, which would have been a nightmare.
Or debtor's prison, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or suicide. So she was ready to risk her own life to save her husband's honor.
I'm wondering how the two of you see these, you know, Nora's limited opportunities and how she realizes, you know, she's fully woke to how limited her opportunities are. And I'm wondering how you think about that compared to, I guess, expectations of women and societal roles of women through a contemporary lens today. I mean, obviously things are a little bit better in the sense that it's much more common for women to be in the workplace. That's not quite what it was. But the gender wage gap is still a very real thing. Terms like breaking the glass ceiling have, you know, everybody knows what that means. And that's still a thing. Is it kind of interesting but also kind of depressing that this play is still so relevant almost 140 years later? We're nodding.
Yes, we are. We are.
We're nodding.
Emphatically nodding. Definitely. Back then, a lot of it was who you were married to, your captor, how great your captor was. And some women had pretty decent captors. Torvald was a pretty good captor.
Very, very good.
He was kind and gentle and definitely took care of her. But really what Nora wanted was a voice. She wanted to be heard and she wanted respect. And she wanted respect from her husband, and he would never give her that because she was a woman.
Yeah.
And women didn't have intellect as far as men were concerned. They were there to be pretty and to serve them and to bear the children and to keep a nice home, and they were not supposed to have their own ideas and definitely not have their own opinions.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting also just considering a historical perspective on the play. I was reading about a production of this early on in Germany where the actress was just refusing to do it, saying like, oh, I would never leave my children. And it's almost like she herself was unable to see the deeper themes or how trapped perhaps she was.
Oh, that's interesting. She refused to play the role because she just couldn't see past that part.
Yeah,
of it.
Like this isn't something that we should be showing people in theater. This isn't how a woman would behave. This is not honorable.
Wow.
Yeah, I just thought.
Well, she wasn't a very good actress.
No, she was not a very good actress.
Sorry.
Part of the point of acting is doing things.
Being someone else.
Being right. Somebody else.
Well, yes. This play was very, very scandalous. It was banned in many places. An interesting anecdote that I read was in Stockholm, Sweden, after it had been performed there, when invitations went out for parties. It was written on the invitation, there will be no discussion about A Doll's House.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So even just the fear of that discussion. And
of course. Yeah. Women getting ideas. Yeah. Women not being happy. Gee, maybe I'll leave my husband. Maybe I'll leave my children.
You know, tell me, you know, you had mentioned hearing, you know, gasps of women in the audience as this production has been going on. Can you tell me more about how this production that you are involved in has been received or what you've heard?
We've gotten a lot of very, very good feedback from people just in general. I think they love the end. They love seeing of one thing that Anne really wanted to do, and I think we've done a very good job of it, is have this period piece play and not shown as very stiff characters. The show, this was a man and woman. They were in love. They had all these different people in their home. So we've had a lot of fun with it. So most of the feedback I've received from audience was they've enjoyed seeing that side of it. Anne has also given us a lot of carte blanche with blocking and in terms of stage direction, where we're able to have a lot of movement. She wanted us to get on the floor, turn our backs at certain points instead of just facing the audience and cheating out and doing some of the more typical movement. So there's some very interesting movement within the show, which also seems to be getting a lot of good feedback from what I've heard.
Yeah, Dina does not stop moving in the play.
I cannot sit still.
You know, she's a bird. She flits around and she twirls, she whirls, she pecks, she – it's very interesting. And our set is literally a cage. It's a gilded cage.
Wow. I'm wondering if working on this production has taken a toll on you in a way that maybe working on most other productions don't. And by that I mean, like, I'm thinking about, like, you know, like when you played like Elaine in Arsenic and Old Lace. That's a fun role. But this one I feel like you could – go to rehearsal or do a production and then go home and then just lie awake in bed all night.
Oh, my God. Well, it's funny you just said that, because I did this really cool thing a week ago where I was waking up at 4 in the morning with crippling anxiety every day for about a week. It was that. I have a humongous line load, and I'm grateful and blessed beyond measure to even be honored to play this part. I love every minute of it. But I have to channel the energy of about 23-year-olds to be on constantly. I cannot lose focus. I cannot veer anywhere. It's a very, very demanding character. So I've got to be on my game. Prayers and Red Bull have helped a lot. And Anne, she's been getting daily phone calls. I have a wonderful cast. And we have just a lot of support within the cast, with friends, family. Anne is incredible. It's a very difficult role, but it's wonderful.
Well, Nora is the equivalent of Hamlet, we were saying. Yes. Maybe even more so, with the line load and the fact that she is in every scene save one. And this is a 3-act play, 2.5-hour long play. And the final scene between she and Torvald, which we, the three of us, fondly refer to as the long day's journey into night scene.
It's 6 minutes.
Because it's very, very intense. Well, for me, I've been in an Ibsen coma for a good 5 months now. So I'm looking forward to getting out of 1879 Norway for a while and maybe going into some contemporary comedic zone. Though I've loved every moment of it. When I acted, my tagline was anything in a corset and an accent, and I'm your girl. So I could live in these plays forever.
Does the setting itself add additional challenges? And I'm just thinking in terms of like set and costume design, because, you know, you can't just go down to the store and buy the outfit you're going to need for a woman in the 1870s.
We have the most amazing costumes by Diana Waldier.
Diana Waldier, you are amazing.
She's a goddess.
She is the best.
They were lovingly made to fit everyone, and Dina's costumes are phenomenal and definitely help her get into character.
Undoubtedly. She and Diana is so wonderful. She works with the actors she wants. She created my skirts, so there's a lot of movement because Nora twirls and spins and skips and
dances.
She's all over the place. So Diana wanted to make sure that there was enough movement for that. She hand-stitched a lot of – everything she does is just meticulous and perfect. They would not be what they are without her.
And early in rehearsal – the women have been corseted, and Diana ran up muslin skirts for them so they would learn movement, because women moved very differently back then when you're restricted, constricted that way.
Yeah. And again, looking at the you know, modern day context versus the historical context that this takes place in, do you think – was it really just serendipitous, or was it more planned that you're able to do this now? Because I know you've both wanted to do this for a long time, and now, you know, look at the size and the success of the Women's March last year, you know, now the Me Too movement, really having big changes in our culture. Women, you know, feeling like they can speak up for the first time and actually be heard, and people actually taking them seriously.
It was definitely serendipitous.
Absolutely.
I can't take credit for the Me Too movement. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's very important that, especially with our young women, you know, teenage women and women in their 20s who have come of age where they've taken their rights for granted, I think a lot of young women, and don't realize how many women have come before. I mean, suffragettes who were thrown into jail for marching for the right to vote. Women like Laura Peterson, Ibsen's friend, whose husband put her in an insane asylum.
Yeah.
Men were able to do that to women back then. You're not being obedient. You're not being a good wife. You're hysterical. I'm putting you away for a while. Women had absolutely no rights.
Yeah. Did the playwright, Ibsen himself, catch any kind of backlash for writing this at a time when really the concept of feminism was...
Oh, definitely. Well, he's considered the first feminist playwright, but,
yeah.
But what I find interesting is he considered himself a humanist. He
yeah.
felt like it's important that the individual understand what they believe. And he was very zen. He said, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. He had a real problem with the middle class, which was ruled by the church, by the family. He felt that conformity led to being childlike and not coming to your own realizations of what you believe.
Yeah.
So he felt like everybody should rebel.
Yeah. Interesting. And I also wanted to touch on, because I didn't realize this, when you had considered the decision of setting it like in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, I was thinking sort of along the lines of blue collar working class.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because Dina came fresh off of Streetcar Named Desire to do this play. She did not have a break. She played Stella.
I took the Streetcar Named Desire to Norway. I have not gotten off that crazy train.
Got on a sleigh.
Yes, I played Stella in Streetcar, which was wonderful. So I said goodbye to New Orleans. And we just closed that 4 weeks ago. Isn't that crazy?
Right. She came. She crammed all these lines in her head within a matter of
hence
weeks.
The crippling anxiety.
Right,
so yeah, this role was it's a huge responsibility, and so many women and men, of course, but they read this play in high school. They know this play. They know this show, and they love Nora. So it was a big responsibility to bring her to life and take very good care of her too. So I
well, just the fact that you know, that was a pipe dream. It really wouldn't have worked because. Today, if you couldn't have that story today because we have credit. We have credit cards. If Dina had had if Nora had had a Visa card, she would never have gotten into the problem that she got
into. No, she would have flown back to Italy and had a really good time.
Right.
She would have been
yeah.
fine. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to consider, like, if you wanted to go back to that sort of type of society as far as like the limitations of women, you really don't have to look any further than like the dystopian novel that, you know, we now see on Hulu with
right, Margaret Atwood.
Yes, Margaret Atwood.
Mm-hmm.
And,
definitely.
And how like even women are wearing like the red cloaks when they're sure. protesting real things now.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, our rights are still in jeopardy. Our rights are in jeopardy of being taken away from us. I mean, we have someone on the Supreme Court that would like to take away our rights. So I think women can never sit back and be calm about anything. And really, Ibsen really discusses that in the play when Torvald says, you know, his reputation is everything to him and how dare she humiliate him and jeopardize his standing in the community. And every woman in this play sacrifices something, and Nora most of all.
Yeah.
And she has that great line where she says, thousands and thousands and thousands of women have sacrificed themselves.
And it's interesting, Torvald's so, you know, socialized in this toxic culture that it's really not even possible for him to consider her point of view. He doesn't even have it in him.
No,
he's cognitively.
Totally, excuse me, totally trained to believe that. And that's why he was a man of his time. Mm-hmm. That's why it was very important for me to get an actor that was accessible and likable, because Torvald is not a monster. He was a man of
1879. Right.
So we got wonderful Brendan Powers, who's with Florida Rep, an equity actor, and he and Dina have created a wonderful dynamic.
Right.
I would direct them for the rest of my life if you allowed me.
I will allow you. Yes, please.
Well, speaking of which, do you know yet what either of you are going to be doing theater-wise once this production closes?
I'm going to sit and stare at a wall for like a week. I'm going to read a magazine and relax. I'm not sure what's coming up in the future. I'm going to take a little bit of a break, just briefly, just to kind of collect myself and relax, throw myself into my business a little bit. But I'm going to, as of right now, I'm just taking a little bit of a break.
Got it. What about you, Anne? Do you know what's coming up on the horizon?
No, there's some irons in the fire, but I'm going to New York City in a few weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing many plays that I have not directed.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that is all the time we have for today's program, but thanks so much to my guests, Anne Dodd and Dina Gayan. Anne directs and Dina stars in the Theater Conspiracy's currently running production of Henrik Ibsen's 1879 classic play, A Doll's House, at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers. You can still catch performances of the show tonight, Friday, and Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and this Sunday afternoon at 2. Anne Dodd and Dina, thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone, Mike Canary, and yours truly. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Rachel Iacovone today. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.